Tom, how are you?
I'm great, Tony. As you said, the sun's shining, the skies are blue. A little bit chilly, but hey, welcome to Michigan.
Well, I want to talk to you about a piece that you wrote about teachers, but prior to that, you travel the world, especially over to China, and you always have some interesting takes. In the MichiganView.com and the Detroit News, I read a piece titled Chinese Ruler's Greatest Fear is Losing Control. And I wanted to get your thought on what's the relationship between China and what's going on in the Middle East. How are the Chinese taking this?
Well, if you look back in China's history, it's not a new phenomenon. The rulers have always taken a mandate from heaven, and that means maintaining that relationship with the people. And as we're reading today, and the New York Times is reporting that the Chinese officials are gathering up Western reporters, in fact, holding them against their will. In fact, there was a reporter that was roughed up by what was said as some security officers. They're very worried that this revolt that is happening in Libya and Tunisia, Egypt, and other parts of the Middle East that could spill over to China. As I've told you before, I was standing with the students in 1989 in Tiananmen Square where they were calling for an end of corruption and for greater freedom and democracy. And it's been pretty quiet over the last 20 years. But that issue of control and peace and democracy is always there.
Why did what happened in Tiananmen Square fail from the aspect of garnering change?
Well, I think that change clearly has come to China. And again, we need to look at it not only through our Western eyes, but through the Chinese eyes as well. I mean, over 400 million people have risen up out of abject poverty over the last 30 years with Deng Xiaoping's the ruler that took over after Mao and opened China to the world. So there's been tremendous growth and development and benefits to the Chinese people. Is it a Western democracy? No, not by a far stretch. It's a one-party rule. And it's ruled fairly heavily. But there's almost a trade-off in China, and that is that the Chinese people can continue to prosper and the Chinese Communist Party can continue to hold on to power. And again, there's been a lot of growth and development for the average Chinese citizen over the last 30 years.
Tom, I always wonder about the lack of, I would guess, coming out, if you will, when we talk about the Chinese government in relationship to issues like what's going on in the Middle East and in other problems around the world. They really seem to keep a low-key, behind-the-scenes kind of view. And I would I wonder why they don't try to maybe step up and let the world know that they believe that they're the number one power and they should be the number one country consulted and considered when leading efforts and when we have challenges around the world.
Well, they do get involved in some ways, but the Chinese policy is one of, quote, non-interference. They don't want the United States or other countries interfering with their issues, whether it be for Tibet or the Uyghurs, which are Muslim Chinese, that many people feel that there's tremendous persecution to those two groups, or on their environmental issues, or on currency manipulation. They want a hands-off. And so it's kind of hard to say that they want a non-interference policy for them and then going and interfering from their perspective in other countries' business.
All right. And before we go to our next guest, Carol Kane is waiting on the other line. You recently wrote a piece called Support Teachers with Less Rhetoric. What do you mean by that?
Well, I believe, Tony, that the true Statue of Liberty, this great country of ours, is not the statue in New York Harbor. It's our neighborhood public schools. If you think about it for a moment, there's not another institution in America today, perhaps with the exception of our community colleges, that truly take the tired, the hungry, the poor, the huddled masses, children that speak English as a second language, children with disabilities, and give them hope and opportunity. And if you think about that and believe that, as I do, then you have to understand that our great teachers are the torch lighting the way for us all. And so while we deal with these tough issues that are happening around the country at the federal level and the states level as we deal with these budget cuts, we have to remember that great teachers do matter. They matter a great deal to not only to our children, but to our collective future.
Yeah, but by the rhetoric, as you know, there's a lot of negative feelings out there about teachers, that they're overpaid, that they're squawking about past benefits that they used to get, that the benefits, that the health care that they received goes way beyond the means that we have to pay for that, and that they're spoiled, and that has to change. What's your take on that?
Well, look, our great teachers are greatly underpaid. I mean, a great teacher makes a tremendous amount of difference. And the point that I make is that rhetoric coming out of the state capital or the nation capital has never educated a single child. What educates our children and protects our democracy and protects our economic freedom and our growth and our prosperity is great teachers. They make a difference. Research is very clear. Yes, we have to deal with the issues. I mean, the fact is that the state of Michigan is a few $1 billion in debt. We're going to have to all pull together, as Governor Snyder says, and come together with a shared sacrifice. And that may mean that, not may mean, it's going to mean that there's going to be some changes in public education. But at the end of the day, we can't lose sight of the fact that you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. That we have to continue to find ways to get great teachers to be in front of our children, because when that door closes, that's what really matters.
Thanks so much, Tom.
It's good to be with you. Thank you, Tony.